You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions. I stand among you as one who offers a small message of hope. There are always people who dare to seek on the margin of society, who are not dependent on social acceptance, not dependent on social routine, and prefer a kind of free-floating existence under a state of risk. These are the words of Thomas Merton, Catholic monk, writer, social and spiritual activist. How is it that some people devote their lives to a cause, to a person, to a place? And how is it that even in the midst of failures, betrayals, and reversals, they can still remain focused and dedicated to their cause? How do such people sustain themselves over long periods of time? How do they preserve their health and well-being? How do they preserve their faith? The answers to these and other questions serve as the focus for this edition of New Dimensions with our guest, Margaret J. Wheatley. Margaret or Meg Wheatley writes, teaches, and speaks about how we can organize and accomplish our work in chaotic times and willingly step forward to serve. She is co-founder and president emerita of the Burkana Institute. Since 1973, Meg has worked with an unusually broad variety of organizations. Her clients and audiences range from the head of the U.S. Army to 12-year-old Girl Scouts, from CEOs and government ministers to small-town ministers, from large universities to rural Aboriginal villages. All of these organizations and people wrestle with a common dilemma: how to maintain their integrity, focus, and effectiveness as they cope with the relentless upheavals and rapid shifts of this uncertain time. But there is another similarity: the common human desire to find a way to live together more harmoniously, more humanely, so that more people may benefit. She has written several best-selling books: Leadership in the New Science, translated into 18 languages and now in its third edition, and Turning to One Another, Simple Conversations to Restore Hope to the Future. She's also the author of Perseverance. Now here is Michael Toms in conversation with Meg Wheatley.
Meg, welcome to New Dimensions.
Well, it's good to be back, Michael.
So, Meg, let's go back to the beginning and how this all began for you. Let's talk about that.
Well, I've been working with people who have persevered. I've had the great privilege of working quite a bit in South Africa, where people struggled for 70 years, 80 years to end apartheid. I've worked with a lot of community activists who just keep going in the midst of constant setbacks and failures. And then I think I had a pivotal moment when one of the CEOs that I work with, who's along the Gulf Coast, so she's dealing with unending disasters and tragedies, she was in a meeting about hurricane relief that wasn't coming. This was after Hurricane Ike. And the text was very simple on my phone. It said, every day I have to make a choice not to give up. And I realized that persevering is a conscious act where we don't just push along and we just don't, you know, insist on things, you know, that motivating ourselves to just push ahead no matter what. It's actually a very aware position where we notice what's going on. We notice how we're reacting to current conditions and dynamics, and we make choices every day, maybe, on what we're going to do and whether we're going to find the means to stay. So for me, I'm now linking the ability to persevere with the ability to be aware and to fully recognize what's going on in you and around you and make some conscious choices about what's best action for you.
One of the things, there was, here is a river. Talk about, I had a vision. Talk about that.
This notion of this statement, here is a river now flowing very fast, comes from a prophecy issued to the world by the Hopi Nation elders, the Southwest Indian tribe, the Hopis, who have a responsibility, they feel, for the earth as stewards of the earth at this time. They issued this prophecy about this time, and I ended up organizing the whole book around it because I found it so fruitful, so useful in so many different ways.
The Hopi Nation, they had a dream. Talk about what the Hopi Nation dream was.
Well, I think it's not so much a dream. I wouldn't call it a dream. I'd call it a vision of coming hard, dark times, as, you know, is out and about these days. Many of us are thinking that if the world isn't going to end, it's certainly not going to get any better for a long time. And their prophecy is for those of us, they address it to my fellow swimmers. And let me just read a little bit of it. Here is a river flowing now very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid, who will try to hold on to the shore. They are being torn apart and will suffer greatly. Know that the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, and keep our heads above water. And the reason I chose this, and the prophecy goes on to describe how we shouldn't take ourselves seriously and we should gather ourselves together, but the importance of this prophecy to me is that when we recognize the times we're in, we have a choice. Who do we choose to be for this time? Do we try and be people who can stay in the middle of this river, this rushing torrent of uncertainty and turbulence, keep our heads above water, or do we, perhaps unconsciously, without choice, just scramble for comfort and certainty and safety, and we become one of the ones who just disappear from the scene? We choose to protect and defend ourselves rather than to see what we can do to serve others during this time. And for me, that's the first choice about, do I want to be someone who perseveres? And perseverance is never just for oneself. It's for my community, my family, the people I love and care about, or the causes I care about. So again, it's very choiceful.
One of the things about the book that is that it's filled with these wonderful quotes, and I really appreciate that. And there's this one, it becomes a dark time when we lose faith in each other and thus lack courage, from Chogyam Trungpa, the late Buddhist teacher. And it precedes one of the chapters is called Never Too Late, Bravery is a Choice. So let's talk about bravery as a choice.
Yes, I have worked with that quote from Chogyam Trungpa for many years because it's a very interesting thing for me. If you don't believe in other people's goodness or you don't believe in other people's creativity and talents, then of course you wouldn't act for their on their behalf. Of course, you wouldn't, you know, stick your neck out or take a stand for other people if you didn't believe that other people were as good as you. And so what Trungpa Rinpoche says there is that when we lose faith in each other, there's actually no reason to try and be courageous. We have to be defenders of, I think, defenders of the human spirit is what it's really the essence of this. Do we believe in other people and other people's right to self-determination and certain freedoms and liberties, and then we become courageous. Now, we may think that bravery has passed us by, but in my own awareness of this, people wake up at all different times. That thought ends with the statement, it's never too late to be brave. And what I see happening is that something gets our attention, something really feels wrong or unjust, or it needs to be changed. And at those moments when we truly recognize something, and then we become courageous because our hearts are open to that. So bravery for me is an act of the heart. It's where the word courage comes from the French word for cœur, for heart. But bravery is born in us, and therefore the ability to persevere, when we connect at the heart level with a person or a cause or a situation, and we just suddenly find ourselves feeling like we have to do something. And some of the other passages in the book, there's one about, you know, people who become activists in the world, they always say, and I worked with a lot of these younger people, they say, I couldn't not do it. You know, if I had not spoken up at work, if I had not stood up for that person, if I had not helped that individual, or if I had not gotten involved in my community cause, I couldn't have lived with myself. So there's a deep impulsion. I mean, it comes from inside us that also propels us out into the world, into taking action. And without that, there is actually no motivation and no nourishment for persevering. We have to have that deep heart connection with our, you know, that gives us our courage and bravery.
Meg, one of the lines in the Never Too Late thought is that we can't restore sanity to the world, but we can still remain sane and available. And I'm wondering what you have to say about how difficult it is in these times where we live in the fast lane most of the time, and most of us don't even know we're there. Is to how do we remain sane and available? How do we do that? What's a, do you have some clues as that? As to that?
Oh, I've given a lot of thought to this because I think we first have to acknowledge that the world, in its demands, in its pacing, in its insistence on that we value certain things and not others, I think the world is insane, and so I've spent a lot of time thinking with my friends and colleagues, how do we preserve our clarity about what feels right, our clarity about what feels like the basis for a good life, and not these crazed values of speed and materialism and competition, to name a few. The only way I know how to do that is to find like-minded others, to find the kindred spirits and be together. That's how change happens when, you know.
Meg, let me just say that we have about a minute left.
Change happens when small groups of forward-thinking people, pioneers, pathbreakers, whatever you want to call us, when we realize that we are different. The world calls us insane. The world calls us strange. But we have to find the few other people who think the way we do, and that's the source of maintaining not only our sanity, but our direction and momentum and our confidence in ourselves. So having other like-minded others is essential.
I'm speaking with Margaret Wheatley. She's the author of Perseverance, and we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. My name is Michael Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
I'm speaking with Margaret Wheatley, and she's the author of Perseverance. And one of the thoughts that I really liked was, because it is actually the idea that it's the highest form of in the Buddhist tradition, and it's called Only Don't Know. There is only the fight to recover what has been lost and found and lost again and again, and now under conditions that seem unpropitious, but perhaps neither gain nor loss. For us, there is only the trying. The rest is not our business. T.S. Eliot. It's such a great line.
I've loved that and used that quote quite a lot, because that very casual, offhanded last comment, you know, that for us, there is only the trying, the rest is not our business. And over again, I have found that people who are capable of persevering stop worrying about outcomes. We really don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the future is. We can work as much as we can and with as much diligence and vigilance as we can to create a positive future. But in the end, what's really important is that we just feel that this work is our work to do. And we also realize that we're not the first. We're nothing special, that for all of human existence, there have been people who have struggled for the things we may be struggling for freedom and for choice and for love and for happiness. It's just our turn to be the ones who persevere on behalf of creating, you know, a more promising future for people. And it really isn't our business, you know, whether it's going to work the way we hope or not. And I find that sentiment, it's also in Thomas Merton, who says that we just have to let go of outcomes because we never know what's going to happen. It's in God's hands, in his cosmology. So really, we don't know, and to be in that place of true surrender, it's not that you accept the conditions. It's that you do your work to change the conditions because you feel so strongly that I have to do this. It goes back to the statement of the young activist I just quoted, I couldn't not do this. And it's that kind of clarity about what we're doing and our belief that this is a just cause we're engaged in, even if we don't see positive results in our lifetime. I find those to be liberating conditions and making it possible to do much more work with much more vigor and also much more enjoyment.
The Tibetans, of course, they talk about death rides on your shoulder, and that's, I think it's a great phrase that death does ride on our shoulder. We never know what's going to happen in the next moment.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things we struggle with at this time in our culture is those of us who have been out in the world trying to wake up, trying to be more conscious, trying to make a contribution, we've really gotten hooked on making a difference. We've really gotten hooked on our work embodying our passion and having, you know, a big purpose. And all of that's fine. But what's interesting about people who persevere is you start with passion. You start with this belief that, yes, this is my work and I have to do it. But that doesn't keep you going. What keeps you going are things like discipline, surrender, the realization that I may die before I finish this work and it's still fine. And just letting go of these passionate, big, bold visions, you know, of what I'm going to create, and instead realizing this is my work, this is what I'm going to do.
The book is set up in five parts, and each part has a beginning. Like in part two, it says, let go of the shore. Know that the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, and keep our heads above water. Such a great statement.
Yeah, it's a very powerful image, and I think if I can just talk about the design of the book for a moment,
yes.
Because it was designed for moment by moment use. It's not a book that you read through all at once. I couldn't do that, but each page has a hopefully a provocative quote, and then a short essay or meditation on the things that drag us under, that prevent us from keeping our heads above water. Such things as how we deal with anger, how we deal with criticism, setbacks, failure. What do we do when we experience, you know, that true joy of working well together? How do we feel at the end of our lives? You know, what is true success at the end of one's life? But it's really a perseverance day-to-day manual is how I thought of it. So you can just flip it open to any page that you might need, all in the to support us keeping our heads above water, but realizing we're in deep water right now. We're in terrible, turbulent conditions where the dominant emotions and dynamics of this time are fear and anxiety and ruthless competition and, you know, narcissism. These are very powerful and also very destructive dynamics. So I think it's good to notice the river we're in. And then what it takes to keep one's head above water is being very aware day to day, moment to moment, of how I get dragged under by anger or disappointment or exhaustion. Part of persevering is actually knowing when to stop as well, knowing when to nurture yourself, to just say, I can't do this, it's not working, the conditions aren't right, and having that level of self-awareness, which is also a kind of humility. You know, we can't just push the river, as we learned a long time ago. The river is flowing, so our task is to be able to stay in it and yet not get drowned by these very negative dynamics.
Yes, well, you mentioned the word fear brings up the next moment here in the book. Fearlessness begins with a quote, just being with your fear, just being it, is the most powerful form of fearlessness. Jerry Grinnelli, musician. So let's talk about
fearlessness. Many people hear the word fearlessness and think it means to be free from fear, but it actually means being brave enough to notice when you're scared to death and to notice when you're really afraid and not assume that you will ever be fear-free. But fearlessness is really the state of encountering your fear, noticing it, but then not being driven by it, not having to flee from it, but actually stepping forward and investigating it, which always makes the fear go away in some way or another. It's the fleeing from fear or the denying of fear that actually gives our fears their great power. But once we turn and face them and just walk toward them, and there are many truisms from different cultures. You know, if you can't get out of it, get into it is one. Or when we take that action of stepping forward and acknowledging we're afraid and then looking at it, that's when we develop real fearlessness. So it's the path through fear that leads to fearlessness.
The difference between courage and fearlessness.
Well, I make a distinction. I'm not sure it's useful, but I think courage is more of a spontaneous act. You know, you see something and suddenly you're speaking out or you're jumping into a river to save someone, or it's just this great heart action. Whereas fearlessness, I think, actually takes work. You know, so the first thing is to notice when I'm afraid. And then instead of running the other way, to just say, oh, I'm scared right now. I'm really afraid right now. And then look at it. So that takes work, and it takes time, and it takes faith that this is actually the path through to the other side where fear does not have this grip on you. So I think it's an important distinction. Courage is spontaneous, but fearlessness takes work.
Yeah. In the Tibetan tradition, fearlessness is known as an act of ultimate generosity.
Yes.
One of the great gifts we offer others.
Yes, in the categories of generosity, you know, first is satisfying what people need if they're hungry or cold or whatever. Then when you go up the ladder, the ultimate gift is to offer people your fearlessness. And I have found that true. When I'm in the presence of fearless people, I just feel differently. And so I want to be one of those people now because I know that it is a great gift to be able to help other people recognize their own goodness, to recognize their own capacities, to recognize that they too could you know, be strong people, they too could contribute. And you can't give those gifts to another person, one, if you don't really believe it, and second, if you haven't really gotten past your own fears.
So what are some examples of fearless people that you know?
Well, so many of the great teachers and activists. You know, one of my current favorites is Wangari Maathai and Muhammad Yunus, both of whom won Nobel Peace Prizes, and Wangari Maathai for planting 30 million trees in East Africa, and Muhammad Yunus for discovering the great gifts of microcredit. And they were fearless in their pursuit, and they persevered for many years, you know, against ridicule and slander, and Wangari Maathai went to jail, but they persevered because of their clarity that what they were doing was right. I have a quote from Wangari Maathai in the book that basically says, you know, I knew I was right, and they knew I was right, and I knew that they knew that. So, and that's a great position to be in.
Yes, really. It's another thought that this one was the thought of lost, and it's a quote here from Lawrence Gonzalez, the author. Not being lost is not a matter of getting back to where you started from. It is a decision not to be lost wherever you happen to find yourself. It's simply saying, I'm not lost, I'm right here.
Yes, I've used that quote and his work, which comes from survival circumstances in, you know, extreme outdoor environments on boats, mountains, etc. But it's so apt and so fitting for what I experienced today, where we're not willing to just say, you know, we don't know what to do. We don't know how to solve this problem.
We don't know where we are. We have a minute left. Yes.
And I think once we recognize that our old ways of thinking and solving problems, our old paradigms aren't working, once we're in the deep recognition that the old ways don't work, then what's possible is human creativity. Then what's possible is curiosity. But it's this insistence, and I see it so much in organizations right now, of trying to make this very complex, uncertain environment fit the command and control paradigm. It's just driving us all crazy. It's actually driving us all to destruction. And I just welcome and relish the opportunities when I'm with people who say, you know, we don't have the faintest idea what to do here, because I know that's the opening to great new thinking. So recognizing we're lost then awakens us to our good human capacities. But if we don't admit we're lost, we just keep struggling.
I'm speaking with Margaret Wheatley, and she's the author of Perseverance. And if you'd like more information, you can go to the website, margaretwheatley.com. That's W-H-E-A-T-L-E-Y, margaretwheatley.com. You can also get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. My name is Michael Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions